This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, it is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin here on Zoomer Radio, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
Hot, hot, hot. It's somewhere in the city. No, we're not in the city, but it's hot. It's dry. And nothing's really changed from last week when we talked about how things are going at my place in my very, very toasty, dry garden. How are things in Collingwood?
You know what? We have not had a whole lot of rain. We did get a bit yesterday.
Rain? What's that?
Yeah. Yeah. And it came down hard, too. Like, we actually had puddles at the end of the driveway because it came down hard. In a short amount of time, maybe on and off for a half an hour, but not as much as we would have liked, but at least we got something. So, other than that, it's been also very dry and lack of rain.
Yes, very dry, lack of rain, and hot temperatures. It's certainly lovely for anybody who's on holidays right now, who's out camping or cottaging or anywhere near bodies of water to have a place to cool off. Air conditioner is also quite handy. But it's been a hot summer. It's been a dry summer. I've even been reading it. We're making the news now here in Prince Edward County because we're still not technically in a drought. We're just experiencing extremely dry conditions. But as you know, I mean, this island I live on is very rocky and very shallow soil in many places. And it turns out to be a pretty good place to grow grapes as long as you can get rain on occasion. Well, some of the grape growers who are ultimately hoped to be winemakers are really struggling, to the point where there was an article on CBC about a broken stone winery. The owner is hand watering 12,000 grape vines.
That is unbelievable. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, no, he's not doing that alone. He's got some staff helping him, but he's going back and forth to get water. I mean, that's part of the issue. It's nobody has a bottomless well here. It's you always have limitations on your water. I even had my second water truck delivery this past week. So yeah, it's a dry, dry place. Yeah. I'll let you actually do the numbers if you don't mind. I just realized we haven't.
I am going to do the numbers, and then I'm going to support you with some other numbers in a second here.
Sweet.
The phone number here. Please call us if you live in Toronto. The number is 416-360-0740. If you're outside Toronto but still within the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. Do let Owen know if you're a first-time caller, and I'll give you the garden wings. We love to do that. Call often, call early, and please, one question per call. And if you try to go beyond that, I might just have to stop you. Dead in your tracks. The article that you were referring to, Charlie, I did, you sent it to me and I did read it. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that he's been hauling a pair of 1,000 liter water totes. Mm-hmm. And he figures that to water these 12 plants, he estimates
12,000 plants.
12,000 plants. Sorry. Yeah. He estimates that he'll make the 20-kilometer round trip 60 times over the course of a week to gather enough water for the whole vineyard, and then it will be time to start the process all over again.
Yeah, because there's no rain in the forecast. You know, that's you're right, and he's right. That's been the sort of frustrating and depressing kind of part of all this is that no matter, like, you don't ever get ahead. So I get a water tanker drives up my driveway and pumps water into my well, which of course disperses across the water table. It's not like it fills my well. And then I say, okay, which tree hasn't had water in a week. And then I start watering. And so that, you know, it's a very huge deal. And one thing I realized, because I'm sort of watching some of my neighbors, something to remember, anybody who's out there who's struggling like I am with very limited water, but very important plants that you don't want to let die, do not just give little spritzes of water to all your plants in an effort to give them all a little tiny bit. Better to make a list if you need to and water each of the plants. When you do water it deeply. Preferably with, you know, soaker hoses or trickle irrigation, you know, so you're not throwing water up into the air, but you're actually putting the water where you want it. Right. But it's that deep, infrequent watering is so important. And by doing that, we encourage deep roots. So in the future, these plants are better able to withstand drought. Little shallow, frequent spritzes, all that does is encourage a bunch of shallow roots, which is exactly what you don't want, because this does not help the plant through these hot, dry days now, but it certainly doesn't help in the future either.
Well, I've been taking your advice, and we've been doing sections of our property. We do not have an automatic sprinkler system like some people in our neighborhood. Many do. Mm-hmm. We do not. And so I've been rotating the sprinkler, and I leave it on one section for 3 or 4 hours. And so I let it really just, go at it and let it get lots of water. And then that's it for a few days, you know, because, but I have noticed the difference in the grass patches, that by doing that, the next day, over the next green. Couple of days, it does seem green again. Because I have just left it on there for hours at a time.
Well, and the grass is getting some, it's exactly the same. Like I've been crispy. My lawn has been, you know, now it's bleached white, crispy, has been like that since June. But where I've watered, where I water around my trees, there's nice little green circles all around.
Yeah. So it is a challenge for sure.
It is. And like I said, and newly planted plants always need to be the priority, right? Because newly planted plants are not established. They don't have a lot of roots. So those will always be your priority. And then, sometimes you just have to stand back and say, okay, but what is doing good? Like, what's doing well this year? It's not like everything is totally going down. And I can say, you know what? I've had a bumper basil crop. This is just can't stop the basil.
They love it.
Love that heat. Love that sun. I've got ragweed that's like ragweed being a totally, totally toxic, illegal plant. I've got it knee high. I mean, it's before it flowers, I have to get out there and knock it down, but it's the ragweed's doing really well.
Charlie Dobbin has the nicest ragweed in all of Prince Edward County.
Ever. So proud. I wonder if I could take it to a competition.
Well, you know what? We're going to take our first caller. And while we're doing that, I will look online and see if there's a ragwood competition for you to enter your ragweed in. Okay. We have Mary on the line calling from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Mary.
Hello.
Good morning. Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Mary. What's your question?
I have a plum tree I planted 2 years ago, and it has maybe 5 plums. They're not ripe, they just fall down, and that's it.
All of them fell off? Okay, so all the plums fell off?
Maybe there's 2 or 3 still, I don't know.
Okay, so I wouldn't panic. It's still a very young tree. So remember, when we first plant any plant, all the priority energy goes into roots. It should go into roots, not into flowers, not into fruit. You want that tree to be an established, happy tree. So no fertilizer. Don't mess around with fertilizer. Do your best to look after the tree, you know, water deeply when you do water, which is at the most once a week. And I was going to even say, Dean, when you were talking about putting out your sprinkler, if in doubt, you know, get an empty, like a tuna fish can or whatever, and sit that beside where your watering is happening. And you can measure that way how much water you've put out in an hour or 2 hours. And you know that, like, the rule of thumb for a lawn is always 1 inch a week. For like a young 2-year-old tree, I'd be aiming for about more than that. a week. You probably want more like 2 or 3 inches a week, not every day, once a week, 2 or 3 inches of water around the trunk of the tree where the roots are. And that's, I wouldn't panic about the lack of fruit. It's been a funny year. I know even Toronto's had some ups and downs with certainly heat, and heat is very hard on plants. They do, you know, many of our trees who are suffering in all this heat are going to go into an early fall, early autumn. Leaves are dropping. You know, they're just trying to conserve their energy by getting rid of some leaves, and they're probably going to go dormant early this year. They won't wait till frost. These trees are just going to turn yellow and drop leaves. So, and that may even happen with your plum tree, but don't panic. Whatever you do, do not fertilize, and only water, you know, once a week, but water deeply when you do so. Okay, Mary?
Thanks very much for the call there, Mary. Numbers to call, once again, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. Give us a call. Don't be shy. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. And I have to say that lead-in music that we just heard was a bit of a tease, because we heard the thunder crack and all the rain coming down. And I thought, I was going to ask you earlier, do you know offhand, and I'm not expecting you to know this, but you said that Prince Edward County is not officially in a drought. Mm. Do you know what the measure is that officially puts an area in a drought? Does it have to be so many days, or
I think it's amount of rainfall over a period of time, okay. But it's also based on past averages or past history. So that's why, you know, all this talk about it being so dry and people talking about, oh my gosh, it's just Prince Edward County. There's all this based on past years. This year has been extremely dry. In the case of the winemaker at, his name's Tim Kupfer, he's been growing grapes for 15 years. And he said, this is the driest summer that he's ever experienced. I'm pretty new to the county. This is only my sixth summer. Well, not even. It's my fifth summer, I guess, because I moved here 6 years ago. And I've certainly visited here so many times before I lived here. But the water levels are very, very low. I mean, everything is just yellow and shriveling. So, loss of plants, loss of, obviously, for the farmers, I feel particularly bad, because it was funny. It was such a wet May. It rained and it rained and it rained. It was so muddy. Nobody could get outside onto the land in May. And it was cold. It was north wind and rain like every day in May. And then it all flipped, you know, the switch flipped in June, and we went to hot and dry and south winds, and haven't seen much rain at all.
No. Sadness.
Yes.
It really is. It's a struggle. But, let's go to our next call. Let's see. Oh, and we have a first-time caller on the line. We have Don from Hamilton. Welcome to The Garden Show, Don.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Morning.
Good morning.
Good. I want to just, before you ask your question, I want to give you your garden wings, my friend.
Wings. Everybody needs wings.
Okay. What do you got for Charlie there, Don?
We have a trumpet vine that we planted a number of years ago now. This vine has never produced flowers, unfortunately. And I'm at the point now where I'm tired of having to cut it back every couple of weeks because it grows crazy. So I want to really get rid of this trumpet vine, and I need some ideas on what is the best way to get rid of this vine completely.
Oh, that's a tough one. Trumpet vines are very difficult to eliminate. I think you're smart to cut it back. Where is it planted in your garden? Is it up against your house or a fence?
Yeah, it's right close to my house, and it grows up a fence that I have that comes into my house. And the next thing you know, it's climbing up the walls of the house as well. So I'm thinking, I really don't want that happening.
No, they are very what we would call vigorous plants, considered invasive by some. The best places I've seen trumpet vine planted that have seen the best in terms of being keeping your house safe and your garden is sometimes people will plant them at the base of a hydro pole and then they'll climb up the pole and it's, they're beautiful because they're flowering now, right? Hummingbirds love them. But to have it near the house is not a good thing because it comes up in the lawn. It grows everywhere. Because we are experiencing this heat wave, Dawn, and though to keep plants happy, we don't prune them during a heat wave. If you can get out with some big loppers and prune this plant very hard, like even prune it right back to the crown, it'll be hard to do because it'll be so hot for you to do it, but it could likely kill the plant. It just would be so unhappy with such hard pruning at this time of year. And if you really do want to kill it, that might be an easy way to do it without actually making the soil toxic or doing any damage to the ground. Just really, really stress the plant to such a point that it just gives up the ghost.
Okay, no problem. Well, that's great. I'll take that advice and go from there. Thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck with that. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Don. And don't be a stranger. Make sure you give us a call back again.
Let us know if that works.
Yeah. Numbers are 416-360-0740 and 1-866-744-7740. We've got callers on the line from North York, Burlington, Sterling. Don't be shy. Give us a call. Oh, nice. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yeah, we're back here on The Garden Show on this. It is the 9th of August. I guess tomorrow we get into double digits. The other thing, of course, that today is, Charlie, it is the full moon today. We have the sturgeon moon today.
I thought it was yesterday.
Nope,
it's tonight.
It's tonight.
Oh, yeah. It was huge.
It was
last
huge.
Night.
Yeah. Even, we noticed it, or my wife noticed it two nights ago. It was very bright and big. Mm-hmm. The other thing I've noticed is that over the last couple of days or evenings, because of the, I think, this is my guess, because of the smoke particles in the air, you're getting some really nice colors as well against the moon. And so
it's a lot oranger than normal.
Yes.
It's usually yellow, but it's got a real red thing. No, there's no question. It's been so hazy here. Yes, I know parts of Ontario are really, really inundated with particles from forest fires, but I'm really feeling it here. Like, you can hear it in my voice even. I'm just like coughing a bunch.
Yeah, Charlie Dobbin has a smokier than usual voice.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Here we go to our next caller. We have Larry on the line from North York. Welcome to The Garden Show, Larry.
Good morning. How are you today?
Oh, well.
Morning. How are you?
Second best day of my life today.
Good to know. Why?
Good.
Why? Because the first best hasn't come yet.
Ah, there you go. The first best day hasn't come yet.
I love it. What's going on in your garden, Larry?
Well, Charlie, I'm trying to grow common milkweed, and I've been able to harvest some from local areas and then repotting them in, let's say, 2 foot, 2.5 foot diameter planters, trying to get them going. Mm-hmm. And they all seem to keep dying.
They don't like your planters. And you're doing that because you want to provide habitat for butterflies, particularly
Absolutely.
Monarch butterflies.
I live on a ravine, so I have 150 feet out of my backyard that I can ultimately transplant them to. But I know that they like kind of a terrible dry soil. And I'm using, the 3-for-12 or 3-for-10 bags of garden soil and compost, but they don't like good soil.
Yeah, the problem with that bag soil, it's not designed for containers. So the milkweed is probably suffering from lack of oxygen, believe it or not, in the soil.
Really?
It compacts too much. The 3-in-1 soil is very much designed to go into the ground. So if you're going to plant anything in a container, even a weed like a milkweed, you should be using a potting mix, which is designed to allow both water retention but also great drainage. And that's what you're going to need, because as you point out, milkweed wants hot, it wants sunny, it wants pretty dry. I wonder, so you said you got 150 feet. Is it open and sunny, that 150 feet at the back of your property? Or is it all under trees?
Absolutely. It's wide open. Right now, they're, I don't know what they are, but they're 6 feet high. Looks like, almost looks like corn stalks. So I'm gonna you know, take some of those out and put my milkweed in there. Mm-hmm. They're big enough to transplant. Right now they're probably a foot and a half tall.
Yeah, you know what? I would do that because better to get them in the ground. They're more likely to flower and then, of course, fruit and produce seeds. And then they'll blow all over the place. And next year, more milkweed will grow. Certainly, that's what I've done on my property. Milkweed thinks it's the boss, and I don't want it to have any confusion there. I'm the boss. So I've been moving milkweed from areas where I don't want it and then encouraging milkweed in areas where I do want it. And yeah, the open, sunny, just kind of wild spaces is great habitat for milkweed and great habitat for butterflies as well.
I mean, should I, as I try and harvest some more, should I just transplant the ones I've got and the new ones into potting mix, or should I just immediately dig them into the ravine?
I would dig them in. The ones you've got that are like a foot and a half tall, I would get them in the ground. There's no point in leaving them in pots over the winter, so you might as well get them in the ground. And
over the next 2 months, they would get a little bit higher, and then I would transplant them. But if you think right now,
but they'll get a little
and a half, but they're going to be close to stuff that's six, but they do get 100% full sun all day long, no matter where I put them in there.
Right. And you will, I mean, like you say, so you will have to go in whether with a very tough whippersnipper or just a pair of, you know, sharp loppers and just cut down some of the really tall stuff. Just make a space so that you can dig the milkweed into a spot where it won't be overshadowed by some big tall stuff. So, you don't have to like dig it all out or anything, but just lower it, just cut it down so it's only, 6 inches tall, and put in your milkweed where it's a foot and a half tall, and it'll get the sun and the air and all the important stuff. I just think you'll find it has a better chance of rooting and getting established the sooner you get it in the ground rather than waiting 2 months.
Okay. Well, so I guess I'll just start, and when I harvest the next ones, I'll just go plant them in the ravine right away.
Yeah, might as well. I mean, it's very, very hot the next few days, so you might want to hold back just because it's going to be very hot for digging holes and doing any kind of laboring outside. But do, as soon as you can, as soon as the temperatures drop a bit, that's what I'd be doing.
Okay. Thank you very much. You have yourself a great day.
And you too. Enjoy your second best day. I love it.
Well, unlike the milkweed, I know that Charlie Dobbin is the boss. So I
there you go. Thanks, Dean.
I know.
I don't have to slap you around.
No,
I have to slap the milkweed around.
No, that's already happened. I know. We have Susan on the line. Susan is calling from Burlington. Welcome to the Garden Show, Susan.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Morning.
Morning. I have, luckily in this weather, we put drip irrigation lines through our gardens in previous last couple of years. And I'm late spreading mulch, but I don't know whether the lines should be on top of the mulch or below. Can you help?
So tell me about the drip irrigation you put in. Is this something you did yourselves, that you bought a kit
handy husband put like a Rainbird, I think it is, like the fine lines with the drips, like the thing. And I have some raised beds with vegetables that have them.
Sweet.
And it's mostly the flower beds. I don't know whether the mulch should go on top of the lines or whether I need to put the mulch and put the lines on top of it.
I would put the mulch over the lines. That way you don't have to see the lines. The most important thing out of all that is your handy husband. Of course, he's installed this a couple of years ago, so he knows, he blows the water out at the end of the season, and then nothing comes out of the ground. He just leaves everything as is and then hooks it all back up in the spring once you need moisture in the on the garden. So I'd camouflage it. You will have to remember you've got different ends where he'll tell you what needs to be left exposed. But generally, yes, I just say goodbye to all my hoses.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thanks
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call there, Susan. Drip lines, are drip lines a favorite way to water in your estimation?
Totally. Wonderful form of irrigation. Actually was invented by the Israeli agriculture people, the research and development farmers in Israel years ago, 30, 40 years ago, because that's an example of, you know, turning a desert green where every drop of water counts and is placed exactly where it's needed in order to grow whatever. And so, yes, it became commercially available through, well, Susan's husband has taken it up a notch, going to like Rainbird, Lee Valley Tools sells all the accoutrement if you wanted to do it yourself. I don't have a handy husband, so I've tended to go to Canadian Tire and buy just the soaker hoses. They're black,
right,
flexible, and they ooze. They ooze little drops of water. They don't last forever and ever. And sometimes I've had good luck just putting them out and leaving them out and covering them with mulch as long as I leave them exposed at the end. And then I use a click-on system with my hoses. I just haul my hose over. Instead of having to spin it on to the buried soaker hose, I just do that click thing and crank up the water, and the water is oozing out. Of course, set a timer. You may forget you've turned it on because you can't see it, and particularly when it's under the mulch, right? You don't know it's on. You can completely forget, which can be dangerous if you have limited water. Mm-hmm. I did that once here a couple of years ago. I woke up one morning and thought, oh gosh, did I ever turn off that hose?
Oh. Deep watering.
Yeah, ran outside. Ooh, it had been on for 2 days.
Oh,
but
my.
I didn't even want to tell Elliot, right? I was like, Elliot, can you go check the well? And he's like, why? I said, just go check it and then we'll talk. So he goes, okay. And he comes back. He goes, yeah, it's down about a foot. And I went, wow, that's not bad. I just left a hose on for 2 days. maybe it wasn't even a foot. It was more like 6 inches. Like it did drop for sure. Right, the well dropped. But, and boy, it was on the very sunny hydrangeas and cedars in my garden. Boy, talk about, yes, deep, infrequent watering. That was a good example.
I'm sure that the cedars and the hydrangeas were very, very happy.
Oh, they were smiling for weeks.
Yeah, you're a little boo-boo there. No, that's great. We have another first-time caller on the line. We have Rob, who's calling from a town that I know well. Sterling, welcome to the Garden Show, Rob.
Oh, thanks very much. Good morning, Charlie.
And, I'm going to give you your...
Good morning.
There you go, Garden Wings.
Welcome to the show, neighbor.
Well, thank you. I thought I'd call. I listened to your show last week, and I was thinking that mycorrhiza is the subject that should open up and explore a little bit. I got into it and found a different way of thinking about how you're farming, and especially if we're going to go through this kind of droughts.
Uh-huh.
Prince Edward County is definitely in a drought, a serious drought.
Yeah. Well, and it feels like it to us, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's a relative humidity issue. It's really been a strange year. Like, I grow garlic and have grown garlic for many years, and I usually takes me, I could never do the garlic festivals. I couldn't get my garlic cured in time, like properly, because it would take that long because of the relative humidity being so high. But the relative humidity is so low now that I was able to cure my garlic, and I would still have 2 weeks left before the garlic festival.
true. No, it's
25 years of seeing this, right? So
wow.
But anyway, mycorrhiza are able to provide moisture that's unavailable to plants from bacteria, soil bacteria, in exchange. And so with the advent of this discovery, that's how we've been able to plant trees through the summer now.
Right.
Because they're so good at helping plants source that water.
Right.
And one thing I learned that was really fascinating is that for every 1% increase in your organic matter in your soil, that gives you 27,000 U.S. gallons per acre of water storage.
I know. But so it is very hard to increase organic matter by 1% for most people.
Which means one thing's doing, but certainly if you keep the ground covered, then your optimal temperature for the soil bacteria is 21 or 70 degrees Fahrenheit. And But anyway, the mycorrhizae has been a game changer for me, because I think about if you go out and you till and you sort of damage
expose
all that network, then you shut down this mineral exchange that happens at night, where the mycorrhizae trade for sugar in the in the sugar economy.
That's right. Yeah, it's an amazing cycle if you let it happen. Do you, with your garlic growing, how have you applied mycorrhizae to your soil?
Oh, I put it right on the bulbs when I plant them.
Oh, okay. So you, it's like a dust that you powder them with, or what do you do when you say put right on?
Yeah, I have there's a product called Root Rescue.
Yeah, okay. Me too. That's what I used at my place.
And I put it right on the bulb. Like it just
when you
put
plant.
It's a powder, and you put it in water, and then you you dip your bulbs in the in that
water
liquid when you plant them. Yeah,
looks like
and
a chocolate milkshake.
And it starts right from the get go, and you can see the dramatic difference when you pull them up. The root, the size of your root will be a lot longer.
Right, and I think for people that might not be understanding what we're talking about, mycorrhizae is a fungus, and well, multi different kinds of funguses, but it as Rob is saying. It teams up with plants. So this under the ground fungus teams up with the roots of plants, and between the two of them, the fungus and the roots, a symbiotic relationship is formed,
so
meaning that
each
of them benefits. Yeah, they benefit in the presence of each other. So plants do better and fungus does better when they have each other. And for many people in established old areas, that mycorrhizae is naturally occurring. Where I am, or if you are consistently gardening and cropping an area, then you do need to add mycorrhizae to keep it there, keep it alive, keep it fresh, and keep it growing and setting up that great little team that that happens. It's lovely stuff. And no, you're absolutely right. I agree with everything you're saying, Rob. It all is about the soil. The best soil grows the best plants, and the best soil happens if you let it and support it.
Okay. Yep. Thank you very much for the call there, Rob. Yeah. That is very interesting. I was, we haven't talked a ton about that on the show, I don't think, but that's very, very interesting, especially as Rob pointed out, in times like this, when there isn't a lot of, there isn't the excess of moisture or the balance that we're used to having.
Right. The precipitation isn't happening. So there is moisture. It's way down deep in the soil. And of course, even as Rob said, if you can increase your organic matter in your soil, you can increase all kinds of things, not just fertility, but part of this teamwork, part of this growth of the mycorrhizae. And when he alluded to the root question, the first time I ever saw mycorrhizae available for commercially, not for farmers, but just for homeowners and gardeners, it was under the name Mykes, M-Y-K-E-S. So Mykes was put together by Promix, the premier Promix people out of Quebec, and it looked like kitty litter. So if you looked in the box, it was like kitty litter, and there was different boxes. One was for bulbs, and one was for annual flowers, and one was for trees. But it was it's a living entity. So the stores who were selling it didn't know that always. And they might have just leave the skid out in the sun and kill this living fungus that is in these boxes.
Yeah.
It's not slimy. It's dry and dormant, but you can't leave it in the sun and you can't leave it out over winter. Like there's just ways they had to handle it. Since then, there's been a lot of improvements on the way we use mycorrhizae. But that was the first time. And I remember we tested it way back in my white rose days, and it was dramatic, totally dramatic, planting. We were using roses at the time, roses side by side in identical soil, one treated with the mycorrhizae, one not. And it was like three times the roots on the plants that had been treated with the mycorrhizae, like really dramatic. And obviously, bigger roots means bigger plants, right?
Yeah. And it's entirely natural. Yes.
Entirely natural, entirely normal. And for like I sort of said there, some people don't even need to think about adding it because they already have it. Like where you live, Dean, where you live, it's been forest and it's been...
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was never an oil refinery or, you know, it was never a gas station. It's so you have a bunch of naturally occurring bacteria and fungus in your soil. Now, you can't go wrong adding mycorrhizae. It's not going to hurt anything. But at the same time, you don't need to necessarily. Whereas where I live, it was a brand new development. So mm-hmm. a builder had scraped away all the nice topsoil,
yep.
built a house, compacted all that subsoil that my house is built on, and then, you know, handed me the keys. So first thing I did was buy a case of the root rescue that that Rob is using for his garlic growing. And everything I planted here got planted with pails and pails of mycorrhiza. It looks like chocolate milkshake when you mix it all up, poured over the roots as we were planting. And I continue to use it whenever I plant something new.
Wow, fascinating. Love it. Mm-hmm. Love it. That was a great call. Give us a call, please, if you've got a question, if you've got a comment. We'd love to chat with
love
you. 416. Yeah, we do. We do. Absolutely. If you live in Toronto, 416-360-0740. Or if, you know, like Rob, if you live somewhere outside Toronto, use this number, 1-866-740-4740. And we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show, and before we move on to our next callers, I know that, Charlie, you wanted to just comment on that we were talking about fungi.
Yeah, yes, fungi is everywhere.
I hope that I'm a fun guy to work
you
with.
You are. Dean's a fun guy.
I try.
No, I just want to thank Rob. That was a great call from my neighbor, Sterling, and also where you met your wife.
Well, we had met in Hamilton, but yes, we got married up in that area.
That's
we got
right.
married in Foxborough, and I worked for many years at the Sterling Festival. And yeah, it's a dear place to me.
It is. Well, so I just want to thank Rob for bringing up and commenting, because again, yes, techniques for dealing with drought. Mycorrhiza is an excellent technique. Everybody should have some in their back pocket and use it in the spring, regardless of whether there's a drought or not. But I just quickly grabbed off my shelf a wonderful book for people who want to learn more called Teeming with Fungi. So Teeming with F-U-N-G-I. The author is Jeff Lowenfels. Jeff Lowenfels is very well known as a soil guy. So his last name is Lowenfels. He's written a few books. It started with Teeming with Microbes. Bottom line is, this is the Organic Grower's Guide to Mycorrhiza. So it's a great introduction to why mycorrhiza is so effective, whether you're gardening in a big way or gardening in a small way. We all need mycorrhiza in order to have healthy plants.
Nice. And who doesn't like a bigger bulb of garlic? I know.
Exactly.
I would love that.
Exactly.
Okay,
you got it.
Absolutely. And I love, you know what? Well, it looks like we've got some fertilizer happening on the phone lines today, because they're just popping up all over the place. We got Kathy calling from Niagara. Welcome to The Garden Show, Kathy.
Thank you.
Morning.
Good morning. The only reason I'm calling is somebody said something about plants that grow with the drought. And I wouldn't even have to cut my lawn if it wasn't for all these bloody trumpet plants coming out.
So you're cutting your trumpet vines.
That's what I'm cutting, because the lawn is yellow, but these
trumpet
plants growing like weeds, and they're all nice and green. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. Good success with trumpet vine at your place in Niagara. And is it the trumpet vine, did you plant it, or is it coming from the neighbor?
No, I moved in here, and it was well established on the fence, like it's an arbor, and it's all trumpet. And it's just trying to take over, I guess.
Yes. Yes, it is very, very vigorous, as we say. But, you know, bright light, the hummingbirds do love them. But, yeah, if you can control those trumpet vines, good luck. Just be careful. You know that little Shop of Horrors movie, right?
Oh, I know, because I let a couple of them grow along the fence because I thought, oh, they don't look too bad. But then before I know it, they're 6 feet tall and they're taking over.
Taking over, exactly. Get out those sharp pruners, those loppers, and go to work on that one.
Wow. Okay.
Thanks
very much for the call there, Kathy. Yeah. Feed me is the from Little Shop of Horrors there. Yes. Audrey too. Oh, yes. I'm curious, because we've had these two callers about trumpet vine then. Is it Is it something that is not sold anymore? Is it something
is
that you can still...
You,
yeah, okay.
No, it is available, but it is not native. So it... and there's... Yeah, it's a funny thing. I think, you know, it's always that way, right? You want... When you plant something, you want it to grow. Yeah. So, of course, trumpet vine, it's kind of a no-brainer because it pretty much always grows. Okay. However, it doesn't stop growing. Yeah, it's like wisteria. How many people fall in love with wisteria? And then
it looks beautiful.
Really proud when it flowers and it's beautiful. But once it gets growing, it can really take over the neighborhood and your house. Oh, yeah. So it's just something that, you know, it's that fine line. So do your research. At the end of the day, before you buy any plants, don't fall in love just because it's pretty. Do your research. Buy the right plants for the right place. But also, you know, look at the long term on that plant. What's the benefit both to you and the plant to choose that one for that spot? And, you know, like growing milkweed, I understand why you'd want to do that. I grow that as well. And butterfly weed. And I do a lot of really bird and butterfly friendly plants at my place. But then again, I'm really hot and sunny. And many of those plants, you know, the birds and butterflies want are exactly that, you know, sun loving seed bearing type plants.
Good advice. Okay, let's go to our next caller, Barb in Aiden. How are you? Welcome to the Garden Show, Barb.
Oh, hi. Good morning to you both. We're talking a lot about water this morning, and I'm just wondering, is it okay, water from your dehumidifier? Can you give that to your plant?
Definitely, yes. Definitely, yes. I should have mentioned that. Any source of water that you have, whether it's changing water in the aquarium, dehumidifier water is basically like distilled water. So it has no salts in it, no minerals, which can be a good thing, but it is a great source of, you know, H2O. So never dump your dehumidifier water down the drain. Find a plant that needs it and dump it there.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you very much. Good question. And that reminds me, take a pail into the shower. You know, a little soap, little water, excess that's splashing off your body, take that out to the garden.
Really? Okay.
Sounds weird. Yeah. You're washing lettuce. You've got it in a little strainer. Put a bowl beneath it.
Yeah.
Grab that water.
Don't dump it down the drain.
No. Sure. We're like so precious. Every drop is precious.
I actually did. We have two dehumidifiers that go in our basement. Mm. And I did this morning. I've been doing this all week. I use it for the bird bath outside. I put it in there every day. But that only holds so much. And so then I dump it at the tree bases. I put it there for the trees. And I have one of my orchids outside. So I kind of toss some on that because it's so hot. And one of the neatest pieces of advice that you just brought up is the aquarium water, because we have had a fish tank for years, and it used to always go on those changes down the toilet. And you were saying, no.
No, it's full of great stuff.
It's full of organic matter as well. That's all full of that
fish poo.
Feces. Yeah. And so it goes on the plants or outside. And so it's absolutely changed the way that I think of
water.
Excess water, you know, you toss it outside on your plants.
Well, particularly when you're in this kind of a situation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even with people that don't have wells, but live in municipalities with water treatment plants, there's a lot of restrictions going on with, because it's all about reservoirs and emergency. And Owen can attest to this. When there has to be a certain amount of water in the reservoirs in order to have the pressure to run the fire hydrants if they need the fire hydrants.
Yes.
And they won't work without a certain level of water. So that becomes the biggest deal. Like, who cares about your orchids and petunias? We need to have water in our, you know, reservoirs to provide that emergency water, because it's during this hot, hot, dry stuff that crazy fires will happen. Mm-hmm. One little spark is all it takes. You saw what they're doing in Nova Scotia. They shut everything down in Nova Scotia. You're not even allowed to go for a hike. You can't even invite people to your house for fear that a spark is going to get, started, and it'll go right out of control.
So careful these days. Okay.
Yeah.
We are on our last break. We'll be right back with more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back on The Garden Show, and let's jump right into our next caller. We have Michael on the line from Etobicoke. Welcome to The Garden Show, Michael.
Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Charlie, I have an update report on the burning bushes where I live in Central Etobicoke. Across the road from where I am, I've noticed a particular mature bush. I know for a fact it's in just a little under 20 years, beautifully maintained, came up with great vigor earlier this spring. And I examined it after last week's show with the reports.
Yeah.
And basically, a half the bush was completely dead. The other half was very vigorous. And within the week, the entire bush is gone now.
Wow.
Wow. I don't know what's going on there.
Just like fries. Like, I can just tell you, it's like it actually was exposed to extraordinary heat.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this particular bush, by the way, I have many on my property, and that's why I'm very, very concerned. I have many that are like decades old. They're quite magnificent, actually. And this particular one is about 20 years. I checked, no rabbit damage, like from eating around the trunk of the base. And it's got at least like about six mature trunk stalks coming from the root.
Yeah, and no sign of any kind of sawdust or anything at the bottom of the plant?
No insects that I can see evidently. And in fact, it's not totally exposed. It has like above and beyond it, there's enormous white spruces, about 40 to 60 years old, huge towering above, but not interfering with it. So they're kind of partly in this indirect shade, and they're exposed. Their exposure really is due east.
Mm-hmm. And do they burn in the fall normally? Do they turn bright red?
Oh, yes. Magnificent.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good.
Like ideal like location for them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the best thing I can recommend, and I think you probably already know this, Michael, keep doing what you're doing. Like keep an eye, keep inspecting, look for webbing particularly. Remember we talked a bit about spider mites?
Yes.
And you'll never see the spider mites, but you will see the webbing.
Yeah.
So keep an eye for webbing between the, you know, all the little leaflets. Do water roughly. If these are pretty big old burning bushes, you're going to be watering, you know, 5, 6, 7 gallons a week per plant.
Yeah, and, mine are just getting that for sure. So with this one too, they have an irrigation system and it gets sprayed.
Oh, I don't know. It's a mystery. We'll keep on that one. Thanks for the update, Michael.
Okay. And let's go to our last caller on the line. We have Gloria from Scarborough. Welcome to the Garden Show, Gloria.
Thanks for the update, Michael.
Okay. Oh. And let's go to our last caller on the line.
What do you got?
Gloria?
Are you there?
Good morning.
Morning, Gloria.
Yes, I'll be very quick. In my garden, lots of weeds. I went over to my container. It's a barrel. I was cleaning all the weeds out, and I was wearing my pajamas. Actually, I was out very early in the morning. I looked down, and I was covered in nettle.
Like burrs nettle. Or
the,
like
the weed, that terrible weed that sticks to you. Covered. I had to throw my outfit out in the garbage. What can I do to make sure it doesn't come up again anywhere else?
So with any problem like stinging nettles or invasive weeds, do not let them go to flower. Because remember, once flowers are set, then seeds will be set. And of course, fruit. And of course, the things that are stinging you are the seeds of this, of the stinging nettle. So we don't want to let that happen. Keep your gloves on. When you walk around your garden, maybe just carry like a bushel basket or a paper bag or something, and just remove the plants, or at least remove the flowers of any plants that you didn't plant and you don't want growing in your garden. It's very dry to be pulling weeds with the roots attached at this time of year, but we should really control the flowering of the plants we do not want more of. Nettles being a good example. I'm sorry that happened to you, Gloria, but don't let them go to flower. Don't let them go to seed.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call there, Gloria. Sorry to hear about your pajamas.
Sorry for laughing, but sorry about your pajamas. Sorry about the whole experience, really.
Yeah.
I could just see Gloria like stripping naked outside in the backyard, right? She's like, oh my God. And she's like ripping her clothes off. And the neighbors are going, what's going on?
Well, and you had reminded me of when you said burrs. I wasn't connecting right away with which, but you figured it out quickly.
Yes.
My goodness. Growing up in Ancaster at the edge of a ravine, we were forever coming home. It was such a frustration to my mother, always coming home with burrs on our socks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Come all off.
Yeah. Every body part. No, it's true. But the thing about stinging nettles is it just looks like a perfectly okay plant. And then you go to pull it. It looks kind of like catnip. So you go to pull it, and then all of a sudden you get this burning in your fingers. And then it's just like,
yikes.
It's really hurts. But stinging nettles have some huge, long history of both culinary and medicinal uses. So there's that to consider,
too.
It's to consider. All right. We are at a racetrack, as we say. Thank you, Dean. You've been a really fun guy today this week. And thank you, Owen. Couldn't do any of it without you. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.